Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this July the 2nd on the West Coast, now July the 3rd on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, especially you who are serving your country in the U.S. military. And we also want to welcome those listening in via blogtalkradio.com on the internet. Well, we're upon the 4th of July weekend here, and I feel in a small way I can thank those that are around the world serving the country. Hopefully they're serving it in the way we would like the country to be served, and I know that everyone is doing the best they can do. They're making great sacrifices by not being able to be at home with their families, risking their lives, and really seeing some things that would probably scare the dickens out of most of us if we were to experience it firsthand. And in honor of all of you who are not able to participate in the 4th of July Independence Day celebrations that are to occur on the 4th, which is this coming Sunday, and since I'm not broadcasting a show, I thought I would pay a short tribute at the top of the show to you. This is my rendition of our nation's theme song, the one that we place our hand over our heart while it's playing, our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner. This is my arrangement. I've performed, arranged, orchestrated, and produced this. And this is for all of you in the military. to you and the U.S. military. That comes from my heart through our U.S. Constitution and to you. And we thank you for your service to our country on this 4th of July weekend. I have to be honest with you. This show, as many of the regular listeners know, is a show about bringing the truth to you the best way we know how. And when I was composing this music, I put myself in a position of someone that loves his country, someone that cares for the people in this country, and someone despises the things that go on in this country. And I thought, if as a music composer and arranger and performer, that I could put my own signature on a version of this that evokes those feelings in a different way from how we usually hear this song performed. Of course, I have a version that I sing as well with that. And, of course, that was the instrumental version. But you can hear the emotion that's coming from my heart out to all of you that risk your lives on a daily basis, as I said earlier. And you really are courageous. You're brave. And the last word of that song is the brave. And in fact, I repeat it three more times at the end as that music is sort of going into a crescendo and building into a huge climax. It's to honor you that I did that arrangement. And to evoke the feeling of what it means to belong to a people, to belong to a nation, and taking into account the good things that happen in that country, in that nation. And right now, we're in a time where we don't have a lot of good things happening, and we can change those things. And I've talked about that on some previous shows. Certainly what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico appears to be something that's designed to destroy the whole world. Whether we're wary of that, whether we're aware of that, whether we realize what is actually going on, we are in a position to do something about it, and we're going to talk about that, the consequences of not doing anything about it, and what might happen should we do something about it, with tonight's guest. He is my regular Friday night guest, my co-host, our resident science advisor here at Evident Footprints. Why? Because this man knows more about true science, universal science, than anyone I've ever met in my life. And he's my good friend, and I'm proud to know him and proud to have him on every week, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Tom, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I enjoy being here as usual. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well. Now, Jim, I'm not hearing you very clearly. I don't know if someone in the studio can adjust your sound, or, you know, if you can make sure that you're close to your mouthpiece on your phone. But in any event, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I hope you're hearing me okay, because I can hear you just fine.
Yeah, it's much, much better right now. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Seth. Or Don, or whoever did that. Nikki, the dog in the background, possibly. Jim, I just wanted to get your feelings on what you just heard. You know I'm a musician, and you know I play music, and I don't get to do that a lot on this show because of all the more pressing things that are going on. But could you feel, or did you have an interpretation of what I was saying in the music?
Well, I could. As you know, I'm not an authority in music, but as far as the way it was affecting me, I could tell that you were trying to emphasize certain aspects of the music, and what I was doing was running through the words in my head in conjunction with the sounds, so that I could tell where you had emphasis. And I noticed that you were, it appeared to me at least, that you were not only honoring the composition itself with your music, but emphasizing like a thrust of some sort or a movement associated with that music, and it was also emphasis on certain parts. Like, for instance, I don't remember all of it right now, but the ending was pretty obvious because you repeated it three times.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was a very interesting composition. Normally, I can pick out instruments quite easily, but I wasn't sure about which instruments you were using. Would you be kind enough to let me know?
Well, that was a whole orchestra, actually.
I know it was, but...
I used many acoustic instruments. I mean, there were trumpets, trombones, flutes, oboes, French horns, violins, violi, I should say, celli and bass violi, and then timpani, you know, a full complement of percussion. And, you know, I have to tell you and the listeners, Jim, that when I wrote that, I was sort of in another world. It was like I was looking down upon the country and seeing everything that was going on and understanding what the significance of the country was. Why God allowed the United States of America, the Republic, to be created. And that it was to be an example for the rest of the world. It wasn't intended for it to be raped and pillaged and hijacked and defiled as it is today. And I don't think there's a conscious person in the world that can see it like that today. And that is certainly a reflection on the corruption of corporations, the corruption of secret societies, and the corruption of governments themselves, including our own, that would allow it to become anything other than how I saw it when I did this arrangement. And I've worked with legitimate music my whole life, and I have a great appreciation for all styles of music that represent the art form. It's when it's used for mind control, or when it's used to sell products, or when it's used to create an illusion, which leads one down an improper path for their well-being, that I take issue with it. And there are all kinds of ways that you can perform the national anthem. Jimi Hendrix did a version with a guitar during the Woodstock concert many years ago in the 1960s. And that's still very well known because it was his interpretation. It was very controversial, and at the same time, no one had ever heard it and probably even thought to perform it that way. And there have been many other great arrangements. Whitney Houston had one done for her by a very talented musical arranger, and she performed that, if I recall, it was at one of the Super Bowls. It has great meaning when it's performed with great feeling and some creativity. So that, you know, that was my contribution in that regard. You know, I'm trying to let the listeners know what inspires somebody to do a different rendition. Those of you who know music will have recognized that it wasn't in the standard 3/4 time. I took it outside the box and put it in 4/4 time. It became something new. It became something different and something original and something creative and something that has real hope and real change in it. And it causes us to remember who we are and remember what this country is. That is a real meaning of Independence Day. It's not about blowing up fireworks and looking at colors in the sky as a diversion that's representative of battles, but we were never even told the real truth about that very battle that occurred when that song was being composed by Francis Scott Key. Or we should say the lyrics, actually. And, you know, we know so little about what these songs mean and what they're saying, but we can certainly bring new meaning to the lyrics by allowing ourselves to break some rules on the creative end and speak and communicate from the heart. And that's basically what that was all about. So, you know, the instrumentation was very classical in a sense, and yet the arrangement was very avant-garde, I think. I don't know if you agree. That's the explanation as to, you know, what was in it and how it got inspired to be that way.
Well, I enjoyed it, and, you know, I think it was very appropriate for you to play it tonight since this is our last show before the holiday itself arrives. But you brought up something during the course of that little soliloquy of yours that I think is worthy of note, because it definitely affected me when you said it. And I believe your comment was that this country was arranged originally to be an example and not to be raped and pillaged and, you know, destroyed as it's being done now by individuals that should be doing exactly the opposite. And the tragedy in that, aside from the obvious, I think, lies in the fact that the nation as a whole, or at least the people of the nation, should have a very similar response to what's happening now as they would have if that was happening, let's say, to their daughter. So if somebody had a daughter who was being molested and raped, you know, would you ignore that and turn on the TV and crack open a cold beer? Or would you, you know, run to her rescue? You know, would you just say, oh, yeah, well, rapes happen, you know, it's unfortunate. Or would you start cracking heads? I know what I would do. And that's exactly the type of reaction that seems to be missing from the general populace at this point in time. I don't think you have to be a Rhodes Scholar or an expert in political science or, you know, any kind of advanced scholastic type to notice and appreciate the degradation and the other insults that are being manifest in this country at this time by the very people that we have elected to do exactly the opposite, to uphold what the country stands for and to pledge their life energies, their integrity, and their efforts, you know, to do everything that's right for the country and to maintain the image that was originally created by the people who sacrificed their lives to bring it about in the first place. And I have to tell you, I came from a military family. My dad was a commander in the Navy, and we celebrated the 4th in a very big way. You know, we celebrated all of the appropriate holidays pertaining to the country, like Flag Day, and in the old days it was Washington's birthday and Lincoln's birthday and all those things. And my dad even used to play the marches of John Philip Sousa, while we put up the flag and said the Pledge of Allegiance and all this kind of stuff, and we were proud to do it. It had meaning. I don't see very much of that anymore, and it hurts. Because once this is truly gone, then it's going to be too late, to resurrect it. But right now we have the opportunity to fix what's wrong. All we need is resolution to do so and some good old-fashioned backbone. And that's my little piece.
Well, I thank you for that wisdom, number one. I'm inclined to agree with you as well, and I appreciate your remarks. I'm sure the listeners, those that are really tuned in to what you've had to say, are feeling the same way and are in total agreement. All that aside for the moment, Jim, it seems to me that despite what's going on, there are those that are making whatever effort they feel they're capable of making to reverse the process that's occurring, whether you're talking about the Gulf of Mexico or the economy or the lack of jobs or exposing the corruption and holding these people who are committing these violent, obscene crimes against humanity to be accountable for what they're doing. And these are people that have love in their hearts, and they have the world's best interest, and certainly they have a love for their country. And we have some universal issues that are looming in the background. The average person is totally unaware of the universe. There are people who don't even look up at the sky at night and observe the creation, the stars and the planets. And reflecting the lack of consciousness about these things, when they can't even observe God's creation around them and really enjoy it and understand it and become part of it, contribute to it. We also have folks that are irresponsibly doing whatever they please, as if there are no consequences for having done so. And I like to get into a little bit from the perspective of a scientist, an inventor such as yourself, who has a great reverence for people like Nikola Tesla and Victor Schauberg and Wilhelm Reich and on and on. Where do you see the general path of humanity going in that regard? In other words, if we look at karma, or we look at the debt that we have to pay back to the universe for damage that we've done or things that we have not done when we could have and should have to right the wrongs that are being done, that's called karma in Indian Hinduism and Buddhism as well. But that word karma really is a spiritual debt, isn't it? That we cannot escape. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, a lot of people think that karma doesn't pertain to them because, let's say they're Catholics or Christians or Protestants or whatever, and they view that term as something that's totally foreign to their upbringing and their line of thought. And I think that they feel that that's a kind of a distant concept associated with, as you just said, Buddhism and Hinduism and things of that sort. But in reality, it's just a title. It's just a word. What it really represents, in my opinion, is a higher octave of some laws that you're very familiar with. And I think it's worthwhile to touch on that, just to get a feel for what that word really means. Because if you put it in a perspective that's perhaps a little bit different from the traditional, and you don't view it so much as a foreign religious concept, but rather as a law of nature, it might trigger a different way of looking at things. It might endow you with a different perspective.
Yeah. Well, just for a comment, if I can interrupt just for a second, I want to make clear that I'm not necessarily attributing the word to Hinduism and Buddhism, but it is part of those religious beliefs and culture, and the philosophical aspects of that. But it transcends the principle, regardless of what one's religious faith is. Karma is a word that's used really to talk about the laws of cause and effect. So it transcends religion. I just want to make that clear for the listeners. And I apologize for interrupting.
Well, that's okay. But I was basically going to say the same thing, except I was going to put a kind of a scientific spin or two on there, just because I think that it makes it a little bit easier to conceive of that concept if we can bring it down out of the ethereal regions and present it in a way that appeals to people's instincts or their personal experiences in everyday life. And there's two things that come to mind right away that gives some insight to that, and that is that the first one would be what we call conservation of momentum. Or another way of looking at it would be Newton's third law. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. You know, mm-hmm. If you fire a heavy caliber rifle, the bullet takes off and heads toward the target, but the rifle kicks back and belts you in the shoulder. And, you know, almost everybody knows about that. I mean, it happens in so many aspects of life that something you do immediately provokes a reaction to what you have done. And that's one way of looking at karma. Another way is looking at it from the standpoint of keeping a balance in energy. You know, if we have a high-speed spinning wheel or something, and you want to bring it to a stop, you put your hand against it, let's say, to slow it down, like a bicycle wheel or something, and the wheel will slow down, but you'll feel the heat building in your hand, you know, and that heat is another manifestation of the energy that was stored in that wheel. And the reason it's being released as heat is it's a consequence of you interrupting the momentum of that system with your hand. So basically, that's all that this concept of karma is, really. It's the idea that everything in the universe has consequence. And, you know, you can probably paint that picture with a million little short stories. I remember having a discussion of this sort with my dad once about a time machine, a guy who invents a time machine, and he goes back in the past because he was always intrigued with the past. And he's exploring around the city he was born in, you know, 100 years before he was born, and finds it very interesting. He's taking notes and whatnot. And he goes into a bar and figures it'd be nice to have an old-fashioned drink in a rather rustic environment. And he orders a beer, and the guy next to him gets in an argument with him. And one thing leads to another, and he hits the fellow over the head with a beer bottle and kills him. And turns out that it was his great-great-great-grandfather, and so he just disappears. Now, that's stretching the point, but the thing is that everything we do has a result. If you study physics, you realize that, you know, the belief in terms of everything we do having an effect on everything else is very pronounced. If we have an event occur here on Earth, theoretically, because of gravitational couplings and other phenomena like that, it actually affects what's happening on other planets. It affects things in the stars. And this, incidentally, in reverse, was the original belief of the power of astrology. When a person is born, all of these various vibrations for all these different planets and celestial objects are at a particular point, and they affect you. So everything affects everything. And all the law of karma really is saying is that it's not so much that you don't get away with anything as it is that things you do just have consequences downstream. And it's very helpful for you to realize that that's exactly what's going to happen. So when we wipe out a species, for instance, or we cut down too many trees, or we put poisonous materials in our water, or we mess around with the food chain and produce types of vegetables and other foods that were not invented by God himself, we really don't know what we're doing. And as a result of that, we can't say on firm ground that it's not going to have an effect. As a matter of fact, you know, lately, within the last 60 years or so, the people who study ecological systems have come to realize just how much of an effect things like that have. You know, there was a time when they would say, well, mosquitoes are a pain in the neck, let's just wipe them all out. And nobody would give it a second thought. Or, yeah, the dodo's extinct, so what? You know, all these different things we have done as a race. And
actually,
we've done it.
Are dodos really extinct? I thought they were in Washington, D.C.
That's a different kind of dodo.
Okay, all right. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
The modern type, otherwise known as pea brain dodo.
Okay.
But we've at any rate, the point is that everything has an effect, and in order to really be conscious in a responsible way, you know, we have to at least recognize this law of karma, which is the law of cause and effect, as you pointed out. And there's no getting away from it. It's just as solid in the structure of the universe as the law of gravity. You know, you can get up on a real tall building and kneel down and say a bunch of prayers and then step off the roof. And I guarantee you that regardless of what prayers you recited, you're going for an interesting ride, because we don't have the authority to change the laws of nature. They are there, and they are, you know, an intrinsic part of the universe. And just like, you know, you wouldn't be dumb enough to step off the roof of a tall building unless you wanted to do yourself in, the same thing goes for some of these other actions. You know, you have to realize that there are going to be consequences, and it's because it is a law. And there's no way around it.
Yes. Now, of course, most people wouldn't consider doing what you just suggested. Yet, we've seen examples of people doing that on 9/11. Something drove people to make a choice on their own before someone else made it for them. And to me, that's highly significant. And although that's a gruesome thing to contemplate, the people that jumped out of windows during during 9/11 from the World Trade Center, some from the 85th floor or the 87th floor. I didn't really count, but it was in the general neighborhood of all the damage that people could see, where the smoke was billowing, and where you could see people standing on window ledges, the windows that had been broken or fractured from violent explosions that were going on inside the building long before the building just disintegrated into dust. And so those people made a choice and came to some rapid realization that they were about to end their life and faced it very bravely. We can't determine what final decision or what thought was going through their head, but I'm sure that they saw their whole life flash before their eyes in that few seconds that it took them to hit the ground. And it was horrible. It was horrific to anyone that watched that, except those that perpetrated the deed. And we think that because we weren't involved in that we bear no responsibility for what happened. And I'm very conscious of the fact that we are all responsible for a way, and we have a responsibility to bring closure to the event. That doesn't mean stop talking about it or avoid talking about it, but to reveal the truth in the best way that we can, and then move on with the appropriate actions to prevent that from ever happening again. And what's happening to the people politically, and what's happening to the people in disregard for their constitutional republic, which is what this country is, what the government was intended to be, we have a responsibility to recognize that, not to pretend like it's not happening or to ridicule those that are bringing it to our attention. That's the favorite ploy by those that do these evil deeds, that perpetrate these deeds upon humanity. Or mankind, whatever term you want to use. And so, while we're ensconced and provoked and prodded into accepting a reality of, well, the law of attraction is see yourself making a lot of money and you'll have a lot of money and then you can buy lots of things. That's not who we are. And the law of attraction certainly goes a lot further than a fiat economic system or a usury credit system. You see, we don't even pay attention to the rituals and the symbology that we're bombarded with on a regular basis by these beings. I can't even call them people anymore because they don't show any indication of being human beings or people. They're something else, and we have a karmic debt by not seeing that and realizing that and acting accordingly upon that realization. Some of us do. Some people are terribly, terribly upset with what's going on. But they're not just upset. They're in a frame of mind to say, hey, I can do something. I have abilities. I have knowledge. I see the truth, and I know that. And I can network with people, and I can wake people up. I can bring people to claim or reclaim the responsibility that we've all thrown out the window, the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. Any comments you want to make on that, Jim? And I apologize for going on so long, but I don't pay tribute to Apollo, the sun god, when I say that. So.
No, it's okay. I mean, after all, it's your show. But the points you make, of course, are extraordinarily valid, and there are a number of things that I've noticed over the years concerning this type of propagation of information. There's a tendency in we humans to either ignore or suppress or not listen to certain things, even if they are true, simply because they're also unpleasant. But, you know, the interesting thing is the law of karma is going to exist whether you want to acknowledge it or not. And when you hear about certain things which are really worthy of note and should be acted upon, if you choose to ignore those things, whatever they may be, because they're unpleasant, there will be repercussions of that. And, I hate to bring this up, but there's two things on my mind which are really annoying, and one of them is that it's a well-known fact to anybody who's bothered to dig into it that there has been a policy of genocide toward the American Indians by the United States government for at least 100 years, possibly longer, and it's still in place. You can look into it. And you know, the massacres that took place and all the things that we did, you know, because we wanted the land and we had eminent domain and all this other nonsense, is not just going to go away. There will be repercussions for that. Also, in other countries, other governments did similar things. I remember reading about, when the southern portion of Africa was being settled, that hunting expeditions were actually encouraged to actually go and have sport of killing the indigenous population for sport, just as if they were a deer or an antelope or something. Those kinds of things don't go away. They hang over us like a fog, like a cloud. And the reason that that happens is because it would have been the duty of people to become outraged at such things and prevent them, not to ignore them and say, well, it's, you know, it's a facet of progress. What can we do?
Well, what you're describing is in the sense or the context of what is called a safari, and yet we have safaris going on in these times all over the world, only they call it war. It's the same thing. They may not wear the same khaki shorts, but they put on their camo and they invade countries, and millions of innocent people who are minding their own business get caught up in it, and we're lied to about the reasons for this. We're told that this is for our safety, for our security, and to give these people the opportunity to vote. Isn't that ridiculous?
Especially when you consider the modern version of voting, which now is done by an electronic computer, which is already programmed to give a particular outcome irregardless of the vote. So, you know, everything is tilted in such an unnatural way that, you know, there's no way that we're not going to pay the tab on this one way or another.
Yeah, we're aware of these things. I mean, you're bringing this out, and there we have video of this from the last election, from the primary campaign. We witnessed this on websites across the country, and people posted those on YouTube. I posted several of those, many of them on my website, and pieces about what was being said. However, in the end, what was done about it? You see, you have a totally corrupt system, and yet everyone also is dysfunctionally trying to save that corrupt system. We need a new system, don't we? We need to recreate this in the spirit of how the original Constitution and the Constitutional Republic was created, because that was God's gift to mankind, and it's been abused and defiled throughout history.
Well, we need to be at least as creative as the opposition. Now, consider this horror story that's going on what's the name of that state? Arizona. Take that situation where we have this border dispute, right? The word has been spread from the Mexican border all the way to Terra del Fuego, which is at the very tip of South America. Walk north, you won't find any opposition at the border. When you get here, you'll have total forgiveness for anything that you did wrong. You'll have a job waiting for you. You'll have free medical. You'll have this and you'll have that. But the only thing we ask in return is your vote. Now, tell me how that's any different than a rigged voting machine.
Well, it's not.
The concept, it's just another type of merchandising. They take the same concept and find another way of applying it so that you don't notice what they've changed. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that you have to be vigilant about. That's what the Founding Fathers meant when they said liberty requires continual vigilance. Because
yes,
when you close your eyes to these types of things, liberty evaporates. And if you don't think that there's been a change in our liberties just since, let's say, the 1950s or the end of World War II till the present day, you are sadly mistaken. They are being removed at an incredible rate. And, you know, what's waiting for us is fascism.
Yes.
And, you know, and Jim, they tell us that our currency here in America is the dollar, the U.S. dollar. And that's to be accepted as an international medium of exchange. And yet we know it's worthless here. So how can it be anything less than worthless anywhere in the country where their currencies are considered to be more valuable? Now, I submit that it's not the dollar, nor is it gold, nor is it silver. The real currency is fear. That's what they're peddling. That's what they're feeding everyone, is fear. And it's an illusion. It really is. They're projecting their own fear onto us because of all the changes that are taking place in the whole of the universe, which is so infinitely expansive that you can't wrap your mind on the concept, even on the words, let alone picturing what that might look like. You could never see all of the universe. It's that big. Which clearly demonstrates how infinitesimally small we are as beings, and we've been given this responsibility, or we're led to believe that we have this responsibility of taking care of this planet, and we're witnessing it being destroyed, and we're doing nothing about it. Our hearts are closed to that. Oh, we feel bad for the birds. And we feel bad for the fish, especially if we're trying to get shrimp and we can't find it anywhere. And I'm being a bit facetious because there are people that are of that mindset. Their consciousness is pretty low. I think they'd be knee-high to a grasshopper, as they like to say in the South, if they could see where their consciousness is. And that's not everyone. There are people that are definitely concerned. But those that should be most concerned about this are the perpetrators of these events, these false flag events, destroying the ecosystem of the Gulf of Mexico, destroying the lives of thousands of people in New York City or in Oklahoma City or in Washington, D.C., or wherever they well please, New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina. Which was nothing but a practice session for what they're doing now. And if you go back and look at the dates of all of these events, you'll notice that Columbine and certain events that occurred in Bali or in New York City have matching dates. They're even using the same dates to perform these satanic rituals upon humanity. and we watch it, we turn our head, turn the other cheek is what they tell you in Christianity, and let them slap you on the other one too. Well, there's a spiritual meaning behind that, but it doesn't mean that you become an idiot or a glutton for punishment. It's not about sadomasochism. There's a spiritual law that prevails over everything in the physical or the mental. And I didn't mean to go off on a rant, but I felt that needed to be said.
Well, it's true. I mean, even our personal anatomies are a reflection of that very type of structure. You know, if you develop a problem with your heart or your stomach or your kidneys, I assure you that occurred in the energy field of your body before it manifests in the physical. And before it took place in the energy field, it was manifest in your mind in some way, shape, or form, even if you're not conscious of it. And before that, it was represented by some type of maladjustment, let's call it, in your spiritual structure. And so, if you think it's any different with the rest of reality, you're sadly mistaken. Every single thing that we focus on in the physical has a higher expression of itself. And it exists there before it exists in the 3D world that we're familiar with. And the same is true of events, I might say, or even thoughts. If you really study the ancient writings and the philosophies of more spiritually inclined philosophies, it will tell you that very thing. As a matter of fact, they were referred to as thought forms. You know, what you manifest in the physical world, everything is the result of a thought that was not only generated in your mind, but that formed the basis of actions that were taken, which eventually caused that energy to precipitate as matter in the 3D world. I mean, it's a very simple concept, and we're so familiar with it that we often don't realize just how powerful it is. But, you know, a woman, for instance, who's designing a dress for her little girl, she might picture that in her mind. Then she might make a sketch and use that as a pattern. And then she might cut out the cloth and sew it together. And before you know it, there's a dress that matches the one in her mind, which is now occupying a position in the three-dimensional world. And it wasn't here before. Creation takes a lot of different forms. It doesn't have to be done, you know, in one instantaneous transformation from thought to reality like a magician or like God himself. If it comes through various channels to get here, it's still an act of creation, and it still started with a mental or spiritual image that eventually came down through the various octaves of expression until it reached the 3D world. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring all this up is because these people that are bent on either controlling or destroying this planet make use of that exact knowledge to their benefit. And they do it all the time. They do it consistently. And in the meantime, to throw you off the track, they hand you all kinds of garbage to concentrate on and all kinds of problems. They devalue the dollar deliberately, so you have to work twice as hard, you know, to make ends meet, and thereby you don't have time to contemplate these things. Nothing happens by accident. And it's your obligation as a conscious being to start to realize that this is being done to you, and you have an obligation to resist this type of thing and use the same types of mental, spiritual, and physical processes, which are your birthrights, your true birthrights as human beings, to counter these attacks and to make a resistive motion of some sort to prevent this from going further. And if we decide not to, the karma that we will inherit will be the result of having to shoulder the burden that's been prepared for us, whatever it may be.
Yeah,
concentration camps, who knows what, forced labor, you know, whatever those monsters are conceiving.
And, Jim, don't you think that karma or that obligation on the spiritual end could have consequences much more severe than dealing with the issue now, here and now? I mean, there's always that potential, isn't there?
Well, sure, because we don't know how these things escalate if you ignore them. You know, think of the guy that casually tosses a pebble off of a mountaintop and winds up causing an avalanche that destroys a village, you know, 2 miles below. It didn't seem like it was going to do very much. It was only a pebble. But it hit another pebble, and then it hit a bigger one, and then there were three, and then there were five, and pretty soon boulders the size of houses were moving. You know, this is the kind of thing that occurs, and you have to realize that there are trigger forces in nature which cause these types of amplifications. And they're not always in the physical. I mean, they can happen psychologically. They can happen on the spiritual level as well. And what do you think brainwashing is? Brainwashing is using this exact type of amplification. They keep on planting a small, tiny thought, but they do it in enough people that pretty soon they have an entire movement of some sort going on. Whether it's a mad rush to buy Cabbage Patch dolls or votes for Obama. It doesn't make any difference.
Well, they've even streamlined that whole process, Jim, by just taking a lump sum of money and just creating the whole organization to do that, just training them to do it. You know, it's not even an issue of recruiting people. They've created them, you know. Through the educational system and the religious system and through the media, they've created these people to blindly follow without even asking questions why they're there, why they're asked to do what they do. They just do it because they're told to do it. They don't know any better. And, I wanted to, since I've interrupted you again, I wanted to make a comment on the lady that makes the dress for her daughter. What we have going on here is people breaking into the home of the woman making the dress, well, let's call them government, telling her because she didn't buy the dress at Walmart, therefore she's got to give the dress up after it's made, and it's going to be given to a little girl that snuck over the border and soiled her clothes, crossing the Rio Grande on her belly. And in essence, I'm being a bit sarcastic, but we're arbitrarily having things taken away from us and given to others, not of our own free will, but this despotic method that's being used to turn this into a communist state. Let's call it what it is. And if this exists on any other planet, it doesn't matter what you call it, it's destructive. The society has to end. And those that are perpetrating this do not escape the karma. They will have consequences as well. Theirs may be totally different from ours, but certainly our awareness that this is going on shouldn't create fear to paralyze us and prevent us from doing something about it. Your thoughts?
Well, actually, when you start talking about the idea of that person who creates the dress and then has to forcibly have it removed so that it can be used for another little girl who sneaked across the border, you know, actually that is an expression of indirect slavery. And everybody recognizes, you know, the evils associated with direct slavery or obvious slavery, where somebody says to you, you're going to pick cotton all day, you're going to make bricks all day, you're going to cut lumber all day, whatever it happens to be. And you have no payment for that except maybe a shed to sleep in at night and some crummy food to eat. That's pretty obvious. But when you go to work and you have a nice job and you have a home and a family and money is removed from your paycheck and indirectly given to somebody else so that it's not obvious, it's really the same thing, but it's just disguised.
Yes.
If a government official came to your door and actually asked you for $500 because the kid down the block who just got here from Mexico needs a television to watch, I'm sure you'd feel entirely different than the way you feel when you see that same amount of money removed from your paycheck automatically, and you don't realize where it's going. But it's still slavery. You are being forced by law, which is an unjust law in the first place, to support somebody else who isn't doing anything. What other word would you use to describe that system?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do call it welfare, but it's really slavery.
Now, what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico right now with the prohibition of flying over the area or standing near the shoreline, doing a journalistic investigation or a forensic or a scientific investigation or taking photographs? None of that's being permitted. Isn't that the same thing you just described, just to put into another scenario?
Yeah, the masters are telling you what to do, and we're letting it happen. And the real thing that irks me over this is the people who are actually giving the orders, who are making the arrests, who are preventing the journalists from doing their job, who are clearing the airspace from people flying over to see the extent of the damage. They are all BP officials and BP employees. That's a foreign corporation on U.S. soil. You know, in the old days, that would have been chalked up to an invasion. Hello? Why are we allowing this? Who the heck do they think they are? Well, you see, somebody is allowing that to happen, or it wouldn't be happening.
Yeah, and
I'd like to see one of us go over to England and parade right into the Queen's bedroom and tell her, hey, you know what? That ring you're wearing, I think I'll have that right now. Or, you know, any other kind of thought that you might have when you try that. I guarantee you, you'd never make it past the gate. You'd either be arrested or killed or something.
There was one man that actually did that very thing. He was British. Snuck in there, and his claim was that she turned into a reptilian. So, you know, that could be a pretty interesting adventure for anybody. I'm not suggesting anybody try it, but
yeah, I remember that event, but the point I was trying to make was that if it's not allowed in other countries, you know, why in the heck are we putting up with it?
Well, because they're trying to destroy the country. It's a simple answer. And they're doing a pretty darn good job of it, too, as far as their goals are concerned. The question is, why aren't people waking up? Or why is it, why are people so afraid of facing that? They're buying.
Well, I'd like to see.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'd like to see what they're going to do when they start to forcibly evacuate the Gulf states and, stick the people in holding camps or concentration camps or whatever you choose to call them, because 30 million people can't just be allowed to run loose around the country with no homes. So they're going to do something with those people. And then what about their personal belongings? What do you suppose is going to happen to their homes? Let me tell you, I have seen with my own eyes the results are very similar, where this tactic was actually tested to people that were victims of tornadoes. Okay, they were not allowed in their own neighborhoods to try and find, you know, what's left of their homes or their personal belongings, because they were told it was too dangerous for them to re-enter after the storm. But the same people that were supposedly the authorities were busy ransacking their homes, looking for money, looking for jewelry, looking for guns, looking for valuables of various types, and then carting them off. And if you don't think that the same thing is going to happen on a much larger scale if they start evacuating these states, you're sadly mistaken. You know, what do you think they're spraying these chemicals for that's supposed to dissolve the oil? They're 100 times more deadly than the oil is, and it's starting to have an effect already. People are winding up in hospitals. People can't breathe. You know, and they're blaming it on the oil. But it's actually the dispersants that are doing that. So the next thing is going to be, well, it's too dangerous. You just can't stay here. So we'll clear you out. We'll put you somewhere where you can't do any harm. And then we're going to take all your personal belongings. We'll probably wind up taking your homes and everything else. Look at what happened in Louisiana after the hurricane. So much property was usurped illegally. Where did that go? Casinos are now there. You know, all kinds of other things that somebody somewhere wanted to install. What about human rights? What about personal rights? Oh, they don't count. They don't count.
They refer to the people who inhabit those areas around the Gulf as useless eaters. And that in and of itself should incense people enough to wake up and realize what's going on. But they fall for the daily entertainment traps and the rumors and the fear mongering and the lies. They fall for the lies. I made a comment, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, sometime this past week, let's say, I made the comment that people are searching for the truth, and you can't expect it from these criminals, this organized criminal cabal that calls itself Washington, D.C. and Wall Street and whatever other names you want to assign them that they like to call themselves. Doesn't matter what they're called, and it really doesn't matter what they say, because all they do is lie. They're not going to start telling the truth. They're not going to bare their souls. You know, we had a bunch of preachers, Jimmy Swaggart and Jim Baker and Paul Crouch, and a lot of people woke up and said, you know, these people were all involved in illicit extramarital sexual encounters and bragged about it on TV, got arrested, got sent to prison, and where are these people again? They're back on TV collecting hundreds of millions of dollars. And the sheeple fall for it every time. Well, the reason they let them out of jail is because they're worth more in raising the money that they can skim off, even though they tell us, well, you know, they're tax-free entities. Don't believe that for a minute. They're telling them what to say. They're sharing in the lies. You see, we're hit from every angle with lies. So these people aren't going to tell us the truth. And they use the same methods over and over. I called out a CNN anchor earlier in the week and said flat out that this guy is a CIA agent. He's trying to debunk the truth using the prescription from the very manual that they use for everyone that works in mainstream media. How to lie, how to dispel it. You make a ridiculous statement and follow it with an even more ridiculous statement. As if somehow that applies to a totally different topic. But that's what they do. And the average person doesn't even realize what's going on. They say, "Oh, that's funny. George Bush was behind 9/11. Ha ha, that's funny to even think that." That's how they present this information. And there are a lot of people out there that are just totally oblivious to it, and they will be affected. Many of those people are going to be the victims, Jim. Like you said, you called it like it is. That's what's going on. And I laid out the groundwork for what's really going on behind the scenes with the money on two shows yesterday. And we'll keep doing it. We'll keep bringing the truth like we are. So when we think about Independence Day, how does this apply to our independence? Are we really independent? And if we're not, what is your suggestion?
Well, I can tell you that if you really think you're independent, just try to do something. You know, anything. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, just pick a subject. Try driving without a license. You know, try inventing a new machine and raising capital for it. You know, try to put an addition on your house without buying a construction permit. Try sending a wireless message to a friend in Europe. It doesn't matter what it is. You're not allowed to do it. So where's the notion of freedom? I mean, it's an illusion because you're allowed to run around, you don't have chains on you. But if everything that you want to do is controlled, then isn't that the opposite of freedom? I mean, it doesn't really take a genius to figure that out. And the other thing, of course, is that slowly by slowly, they are restricting us further and further. So eventually, you know, there won't be any freedom at all. If they do it slowly enough, people will say, "Well, gee, it's always been like this. You know, I get up in the morning, put the chains on my ankles, and grab my pick and shovel, and, you know, I'm off to a brisk morning's work in the construction industry." They'll just think it's always been like that. Now, the good thing is that due to the pressures which are being brought to bear by the rest of the world on the fraudulent financial system, they were forced to accelerate their programs enormously, because prior to the last, let's say, 10, 12 years, they were implementing these changes very, very slowly, generation to generation, so that nobody really noticed it. But once things began to get nasty for them, they said, "Well, we better crank up the speed here, because if we're going to take over everything and have things our way, we can't adhere to our original timeline." And the good thing about all that is that the faster they go, the more mistakes they make. Now, I'm not a political scientist, and I'm certainly not, you know, any kind of a prophet, but I'll tell you one thing. I think they've overstepped their bounds with this mess in the Gulf, and I think they opened a can of worms that's going to turn into an incredible explosion of venomous snakes that'll come back to bite them right in the behind. It's just a matter of time. because people might be brainwashed and they might even be stupid, but they're not that stupid. And when they start to see things like that happening in mass, there's going to be resistance. I'll tell you one thing. I spent a lot of time in the Louisiana area when I was working on the tugboats years ago, and there's a group of people down there called the Cajuns, and they're the sweetest people in the world, but don't cross them. Don't cross them. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the first form of formal resistance to this nonsense comes from that group of people. They're very proud. They're very sweet, but man alive, are they vengeful when they realize that they've been done wrong. And there's other groups around the country that are going to respond the same way. It's just a question of time. The right trigger will cause an avalanche every time.
Well, well said, Jim. We're out of time, but I'm going to end the show again. I'm going to play this piece that I played at the top of the show for those that may have joined us late. This goes out to all the members of the U.S. military and all our listening audience. In the context of what Jim Murray and I discussed tonight, I want to ask you to take to heart the feeling in this rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. And Jim, if you would, please stay with us, okay?
Sure.
Brothers and sisters in the U.S. military and your families around the world, we want to wish you a most joyous and happy 4th of July. We wish God's providence, God's protection, and your speedy return back to your country above all over this weekend. We want to thank those on Windtalkers Radio Network and on blogtalkradio.com for broadcasting tonight's show. Again, I want to thank you, Jim Murray, for hanging in there with me. We did a little bit extra long show tonight, but I appreciate all of the wisdom that came through you tonight.
No problem, Don. You know how I feel. I'll always stand with you.
And you have a great 4th of July weekend as well. Also, all of you in the listening audience, think about what we said tonight over the weekend, and there's going to be more tomorrow. If you're inclined to listen to another radio show, I'm guest hosting for Michael Herzog's The American Awakening, which is heard at www.oraclebroadcasting.org. From 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, that's 2 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. So if you can tune in, my special guests, I'll have two tomorrow. We're going to do a roundtable discussion on the Gulf and some other matters. Dr. A. Truat and Dr. Michael Castle will be my guests. So I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. And on this show next week, Dr. A. Truat will be my guest on Monday. I wish everyone a great holiday, a safe holiday, and God bless the USA. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.